Good afternoon, and welcome to the second segment of Born on the 4th of July, right here on RBN. I'm your host, Barbara Jean, today's guest. We're excited to have them. We have Paul Fitzgerald, and we have Elizabeth Gold, and they are journalists and curious and have brought to us a marvelous book, Invisible History, Afghanistan, The Untold Story. They visited there, and I was interested in going to your website and seeing that there was a picture of women in the 70s in short skirts. So I'm wondering if we would see that today.
Well, I think we all realize that, from the 1990s on, the rights of Afghan women were completely obliterated with the rise of the Taliban. And again, we have to remember that that was a Pakistani creation with the intent of subjugating effectively Afghanistan to the needs of Pakistan. And obviously the way that they were going about it was to, to completely strip the Afghan people. And you have to realize that the men are part of this, too. These are men who support women's rights, who were as offended as the women were at what was happening. But in the 1970s and even during the Soviet occupation, you would see those kind of scenes throughout, and again, in the urban areas. We have to remember that modernization and some of the ideas that people talk about Afghanistan being rural, just like the United States, in the cities, it's always going to be a little bit more less conservative than in the rural areas, and it's exactly the same way in Afghanistan. And historically, that's been the way it's been, too.
Do you think that it's going to change at all? In the early part of the 2000s, there was a lot of talk about this oil pipeline, and that really there were negotiations prior to 2001 with different companies. I can't remember their names now, but I used to know them all, and they, Unocal and something from Argentina, and they were negotiating on having this job to go into Pakistan, and then getting out into the Gulf there where there would be a port. But can you tell us a little bit what happened there? Is there a pipeline? Did they ever make it through Afghanistan, or was that just something we heard part about?
Well, in the 1990s, actually, the original takeover of the Taliban, one of the major goals of the Clinton administration was to recognize the Taliban, because they needed to be officially recognized in order for the Unocal deal to be sealed. So this was a key component that was really of great concern. And if it hadn't been for the feminist majority basically focusing a lot of attention on the outrageous way that the women of Afghanistan were being treated, there's no doubt that the Clinton administration was on its way to recognizing the Taliban. So I think what we're seeing today is a very similar sort of a repeat. It's almost an exact repeat of the same scenario. But the important thing to remember in terms of the deal, the idea of getting a government installed that will serve the needs of, Unocal or Brightus or whoever, there are many, many different business interests that are of great concern, many different pipelines that are being talked about for the region. And this has always been part of the crisis for those of us who have been trying to focus a lot of attention on the need to bring back the Afghan nation.
Here comes that early break, and we'll be right back with today's guests. Thanks for listening to Born on the 4th of July.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Returning to Born on the 4th of July, the topic today, Afghanistan. Now, we talked about the oil or the reason for the pipeline. Is it bringing it from other countries, maybe the Caspian Sea or whatever? Are there construction groups over there now working on a pipeline, to your knowledge? Do you know whether that's ongoing? That was the reason so often given in 2001 for our going there.
Well, there are a number of pipeline plans. It's not just one any longer. Afghanistan sits in the middle of a very, very rich field of natural gas and oil, which needs to these various countries, both China and India and Pakistan, need the oil from the Caspian Basin. And there are various schemes by which plans are in the works to get them that energy. Now, one of the things that's been going on, and this is where Zbigniew Brzezinski comes back in. Zbigniew Brzezinski is determined that Russia will not play a role in providing the energy or the transportation facilities for any of this energy that's going to come out of that area and go east to into India and into China and west into Europe. So this is one of the agendas, and this is one of the problems that's being faced right now. Ever since Zbigniew Brzezinski came into influence in the Carter administration in the 1970s, his efforts have directly solely towards China and empowering China at the expense of Russia. And
he's Polish, isn't he?
Yes, he is Polish, yes. And
do you think that's a deep-seated whatever? You wonder how he could feel so powerful and so interested in China.
Well, you know, one of the things that we don't think about too much in the United States is the fact that when people come from other countries and they come here and they get into our government and into positions of power and control the levers of power, on many occasions they bring with them ages-old grudges that go back. You know, there's a joke that we have in the Boston area. They refer to it as Irish Alzheimer's. you forget everything but the grudge. Well, you know, it applies to a lot of people who come here. You know, they have a lot of grudges against nationalities, their countries, and whether it was Eastern Europe or whether it was in South Central Asia or wherever it might be, have been overrun. As an example, the Vietnamese and the Chinese have a history that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years in antagonism towards each other. Well, it's similar with the Poles and the Russians. And so as a result of that, I think that Zbigniew Brzezinski does bring an inordinate amount of anti-Russian attitude towards his policies.
And it's important to realize that, you know, for 50, you know, for certainly since the Cold War started, people were able to cover what I believe now we can look at as outright racism against anything Russian. But the cover was they were anti-communist, and that's what's so interesting. There's a lot of people who really expected some kind of benefit when the Cold War was over. And what happened to people like Zbigniew Brzezinski is they just picked right up and became anti-Russian.
Now you see what's interesting about that is it works both ways, of course. I remember having a conversation with somebody who worked for the Voice of America in the Slavic language section about 25 years ago, and he was Polish, and he was complaining that the Czechs controlled the Slavic language section at the Voice of America, and he felt it was very unfair because they always biased their opinions against Poles in favor of Czechoslovakia. So, you know, as I said, it cuts both ways. But one of the things about the economy in that part of the world, there's a port in Pakistan known as Gwadar, G-W-A-D-A-R. It's a deep sea port, and it's a warm water port. You probably heard, you know, Zbigniew Brzezinski or Richard Pipes from Harvard talk about how the Russians always wanted a warm water port. That was another thing that they said that the Russians were doing in Afghanistan in 1979. Well, the Chinese wanted the warm water port, too. And the fact that the Chinese have poured billions of dollars into developing this port in Gwadar, which just became operational in 2008. And the first ship that docked there was 52,000 tons of wheat from Canada. So this is what's going on. Now, that's going to the interest and the need of Chinese industry and Indian industry is going to be very influential in what the United States does, and it's also its relationship with China. Now, I know we at one of the events that we spoke at back in February, a former chief of the Directorate of Operations for the Central Intelligence Agency showed up at one of our events, and he basically stated that, you know, Charles Cogan is the man's name, and he stated that our background on the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979 and why they went in there was really quite authentic. It was quite accurate. He's also stated in some of his opinion pieces that he's written. He's a very interesting guy. He's a professor at Harvard now. One of the things he's stated is that, you know, since 1947, the United States has favored the state of Pakistan, and we've kind of gone along with whatever Pakistan needed and wanted. But that now, in the 21st century, the United States really has to shift its interest to India at the expense of Pakistan. Now, one of the problems the United States is having, of course, is this issue with the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency being behind the Taliban and being in league with Al-Qaeda. And Pakistan is really on the brink at this point. It's a very, very difficult call to see what exactly is going to happen with Pakistan. Washington's trying to be very sensitive to Pakistan's new civilian government right now. But there are huge issues. Pipelines are going to be built across Afghanistan. Eventually, the war will come to some kind of conclusion. It will be settled. The question remains as to what exactly will Afghanistan look like and what will Pakistan look like when the last shot is finally fired. I mean, there are plans out there. There have been things published in journals, and there was something published in the Army Times last year. It was a new map of the region. And basically, this was a suggestion made by an army planner at the Pentagon, who was stating that the area, the western area of Afghanistan, including the city of Herat, should be given to Iran, and that Afghanistan's borders should be moved over the Durand line into what had previously been the Durrani Empire, and it had been taken away by the British in the 19th century. And that Pakistan should essentially be broken up into sections and into different provinces. This has been an interesting thing. This is what's going on in Washington right now, and this is why it's so difficult to see through the end of how this thing is going to complete itself, because you have a very powerful Indian lobby. You have a very powerful Pakistani lobby. The Pakistani lobby wants Afghanistan broken up. The Afghans don't really have a lobby. They don't have a lobby that goes to congressmen and says, what we really think you want to do is break Pakistan up. So you have all these different influences, and right now it's kind of at a stalemate.
But you really have to also consider what actually would help stabilize the region. And when you look at Afghanistan and its history, and you look at the maturity with which they have moved through the evolution of their own society, even with the pressure of two empires pressing down on them in the 19th century, and everything that's happened, the fact is that the image today gives you the impression that Afghanistan is a very extremist country. But the truth is, the majority of Afghans, even at this late date, are moderate, democratic-minded people who are literally just suffering under this constant presentation, so that it's like insult on injury. They became the squeeze between the empires of the 20th century and when it was the Soviet Union and the United States. And all they're looking for is to finally have peace. That's it.
Well, how unfortunate. Who are these major players that feel I have these rights to do what they do? And it's not new to history, of course, but it just seems amazing to me that today, when we have more exposure, we have a little bit of help here and there, that we have such closed press to real important issues so people can think through issues as a citizenry. I'm thinking of the United States, how oblivious in the main are we all to the issues of Afghanistan, purposely kept that way, I assume, but this empowerment, I'm going back to that reserve, the private game reserve, the attitude of people above government, so to speak, to make these decisions. And yet the cost is the family of the country of the United States. The cost is for the taxpayer of the United States to go into these extraordinary extended wars. And just think of the difficulty on a daily experience of a young soldier. And then also, to me, just my awareness, as I've observed this Afghan story, is the open addressing and distinguishing of the acts of the CIA. Now, that disturbs me a little bit, that militarily there are actions that are actually designated, yeah, that's what the CIA is doing. Now, that's new to me. Maybe you know that they have operated in wars always, but in the Afghan theater, I think they have been identified.
Well, I think you have to realize that the CIA is just the action arm of the policy makers in the United States government. They are paid, and paid very well, to take the heat for doing some of the so-called dirty business that is done on behalf of the United States. But they really are, every nation has their own form of this, the CIA. The French have it, the British have it, the Russians had it, as we know, the KGB. We hear about the KGB all the time and how evil they are. But, you know, this is, Americans, I think, don't really have a very broad view of the way these things are done. I mean, we go off and we fight wars in the name of America, but what we've done is Afghanistan is a very good example, and Vietnam was a very good example. People started asking questions. What are we doing there? Why are we there? Well, what we did was we picked up from the French colonialists. And the interesting thing about that is that, you know, the French actually were there. They had plantations there, they had schools there, they had education facilities. A lot of Vietnamese went back and forth to France and were educated and came back in again and became part of the government. So there was a cultural relationship between Vietnam and France, as an example. The same applies to British India, Afghanistan, and Britain. There were migrations. Pakistan is an example. There are probably at this point more Pakistanis in England than there are in Pakistan. I mean, there is an enormous number of people who have gone back and forth between these nations. They have a long history. Britain has been in that part of the world.
If you have more than $25,000 in debt and are facing foreclosure, we can stop the foreclosure in one day and get you out of debt in 90 days without making a single payment. Did you know that debt settlement is illegal in at least 7 states, and that if you hire an attorney to help you get out of debt, you'll pay 7 to 10 times more than legally necessary? The system is rigged. These guys get kickbacks from your creditors while charging you up front to get into nothing more than just another payment plan. Look, this isn't brain surgery. You just need the right information and the right help and answers to your questions. No clients of zero debt in 90 days have had to negotiate with creditors or go to court. Our proven system stops collection calls in 1 minute. Since 1993, we have helped over 80,000 people get out of debt without making a single payment to creditors. Get the right information today and get out of debt in just 90 days. Ask about our $25,000 guarantee and your free copy of 7 Secrets to Debt Freedom when you call 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256 or visit ZeroDebtGuarantee.com today.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them. And what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect, that yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect. And most of the other herbs in there, I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut. It's working on the liver. It's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
Attention RBN listeners. The Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
If you were one of the modern day Caesars, I'll call them, that are around a table in the Beltway, and you're a member and you consider the world your private game reserve, as you have described, and you're a member in good standing with the hunting lodge, would you feel like you were justified to settle into Afghanistan and invite young militarists, young Marines, 20, 18-year-olds, to go over there and possibly lose their lives, destroy real estate, so to speak, blow up buildings and bridges, as you've talked, would you feel that it was okay for the U.S. to expand into Afghanistan in 2009?
I think you have to think of this private game preserve from the perspective in which they think of themselves. I think you have to put yourself in their boots. These people, I'll give you an example. In 1600, Elizabeth I chartered the East India Company. The East India Company was part, what's referred to by some people as an effort in mystical imperialism. The people behind the company and behind Queen Elizabeth I were trying to compete with the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was something very similar to what's going on in the Muslim world right now, where you really couldn't disconnect the economy and the laws, your daily life, from the secular world. They really were not two separate things. They really, you know, really were. Being a Christian was part of your daily life. And so this is what was going on in the 17th century. And so these people were going to Christianize the world with a new form of Christianity. They weren't going to go in with Roman Catholicism. They were going to go in with something like market Calvinism, someone referred to it as. They were going to, as an example, Plymouth Plantation in Massachusetts. It was a plantation. They didn't come here to establish a democratic and free society. They came in to establish a corporation. Jamestown was established on the same basis. This was a new way of bringing God's will to the planet. And so they saw themselves as a kind of benighted group of people who were going to Christianize the world. And that in the 19th century, you have Cecil Rhodes as an example, and he was going to Christianize Africa, and they were going to Christianize the Middle East, and they were going to Christianize Asia. So this was very much, in our own personal work, we've run into a lot of people, actually, whom you find, some of the most interesting people you find, ironically, when you go to some of these countries who are Americans, are Christian missionaries from various kinds of different groups of Christians who are trying to establish a foothold in a Muslim world. Very interesting people. And so, as a result of that, when you are one of these people in the Beltway, you are looking at a long-term picture that most of us civilians never get a chance to see. We got a chance to see it because we got into the Afghanistan picture and we realized that there was a whole sub-agenda going on that goes on for hundreds of years and has been moving in a direction towards Eurasia.
And I think you also, though, have to factor in something called hubris, which is really very much a part of the mystical imperialism. You know, it really is an assumption that I do have God's authority to do this, and that I am only carrying out God's will. Now, that would have been very much the ideal that was carrying the policymakers to support these kinds of escapades around the world. And I think, though, if you look at the history of empire itself, though, every empire has gone through a high and then it goes through a low. And it usually ends up overextended. That really does seem to be the pattern. So I don't think we're any different than any other, you know, we're suffering from the same crisis, really, that every empire has ever suffered.
And in a way, you know, a lot of us still haven't put our mind around the concept that we have these imperial tendencies. We have had aggressive wars. We have the idea that we can invade countries and so forth. And we have had little glimpses through our history. Yes, that's what we did, but it was called something else. But since 2001, it seems like, yes, we are an invading country. We have taken positions that are preemptive, you know. And for a lot of us, that's a new concept to absorb about the United States.
Well, that's why we really feel the Afghanistan story, going back to the origin of how it actually got started, is so important, because then you realize it has really is not the first time that the United States has played an active role in instigating an event that caused another country to be overwhelmed with the effect of those policies that were actually activated in the United States. And this does go back to Zbigniew Brzezinski specifically activating his Black Project to intentionally lure the Soviets into Afghanistan, and then the financing that then, once they were caught there, then the financing of the Muslim fundamentalists, and again, you have to realize, you know, Al-Qaeda was the database of Islamists invited from all over the world at that time, that were invited to Pakistan. The operation was being managed by President Zia-ul-Haq. This is where the money was being put through by the money that was being coming from Congressman Charlie Wilson and from Saudi Arabia. So there was an intention to actually find the most extreme fundamentalists to train with weapons, to train with technology, to train with propaganda campaigning, to train with drug dealing and opening up the channels.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back after the break, and we'll turn to you, Mr. Fitzgerald.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and, in some instances, your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to Born on the 4th of July. We have been in Afghanistan, maybe off and on for 20 years now. Could it be that case if we're talking about the Russians and our involvement with the Mujahideen, or however you say that, the training, the cost, the money? So now we've been there 8 years, coming up September, right, in October, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think we'll be there? You said they have a long-range goal, these folks.
Well, I think that one of the issues that we have to straighten out here, and I know that it is exactly what we are doing there and who we are supporting and what we're trying to accomplish. I don't think that's been spelled out. That's never been spelled out to the American public. And I think that there's a lot of confusion about that in the Congress, and there's a lot of confusion about that inside the administration. I mean, I believe, I think it's Bernie Sanders, who senator from Vermont, who wants to have basically an open debate, open the debate to the American people to what is going on in Afghanistan and what our role there should be. But in terms of your audience, in their perspective, and in terms of what they need to know, I think that you should realize that the United States has really been engaged in Afghanistan since the 1950s. They were engaged in a very peaceful competition with the Soviet Union in the 1950s and the 1960s. And that shifted in 1973 when the king's cousin and brother-in-law wound up overthrowing the king in 1973, Mohammed Daoud. And as a result of that, one of the things that occurred was he came to power with the one of the factions of the Communist Party. He utilized that faction of the Communist Party in order to gain power. Within a year of him gaining power, he had expelled them pretty much from the government. But that set the United States on a very different and radical course. The United States at that point went to Pakistan and said, we don't really know what to do with Afghanistan. What should we do? Pakistan at that point began, with the assistance of the Central Intelligence Agency, began a destabilization program inside Afghanistan. So that's from 1973 on. And they started to radicalize the entire effort to overthrow the secular government of Afghanistan.
And that's where Gulbuddin Hekmatyar came in. That's when he started, was in 1973.
Along with Ahmad Shah Massoud.
Right.
Ahmad Shah Massoud and Gulbuddin Hekmatyar were friends and comrades at Kabul University. They were extremists even then. They had been educated outside the country and came back to the country and immediately got involved in radicalizing Afghan youth. And that was something that began in 1973, so that by 1978, the country was really in a very unstable political situation. And that was when, of course, when the Marxists took over in 1978, even then, the American position wasn't clear. If you read some of the cables that were coming out of Washington, as an example, and coming out between Washington and Afghanistan, you can read where the thinking was not quite clear as exactly what the status of Afghanistan was going to remain. And so, in fact, we had an ambassador there in 1978 who went in the summer of 1978 who was trying to make sure that the leadership in Kabul would stay separated from the Soviet Union. So there really was a kind of internal secret battle going on for the soul of Afghanistan from 1978 on, certainly, but it had been going on for some time longer than that. But what's surprising is that the United States really was not, even during the war, during the whole decade of the 1980s, the United States was not supporting the moderates. The United States went along with Pakistan and with Zia-ul-Haq, the general who was running Afghanistan during that time period, and radicalizing, supporting the radicalization of Pakistan through the Mujahideen.
There's also theories that really have come from the 19th century, are now part of the 21st century, that deal with Eurasia and the importance of controlling Eurasia in order to effectively control the world. And you have practitioners. We, once again, Zbigniew Brzezinski would be considered a practitioner of this theory. And there are many people who do subscribe to this theory, which effectively means that we, as an empire, as the number one superpower, the only superpower in the world, we must control this region. So when you ask the question about what could we be doing there, these are part of the underlying motivations that have always been a part of this process. But again, when you think about this idea of literally using another country for your strategic purposes, this is what's known as the Great Game. And this is certainly not the only place in the world where the Great Game has been played. But what's ironic is that we are now really coming down to the revelation of the Great Game. Because for the first time, really, I think, in the history of the United States, the American people are actually watching and witnessing for the first time the process as it is happening.
Will it be able to continue, or will there be revolt in your estimation? Will the citizenry here in the United States say, as they have their pocketbooks shrunk and their money stolen before their eyes, will they still say, well, I guess you guys can play the game, or will we revolt? What do you project?
Well, there are a lot of things on the table. I mean, it's very easy to think about, you know, going into someone else's country, whether it's Pakistan or Afghanistan, and dividing it up. But from our own, into various provinces, but from our own perspective, I mean, even years ago, when we went down to Washington and spoke with different congressmen about the way things were going in the United States back in the early 1990s when the Clinton administration first came in, we were told specifically that the United States is a group of very different countries, that the Midwest and that the Southwest, that the West Coast, the Southeast, the Northeast, all have very different agendas, all have very different needs, and that there are very, very hard decisions that need to be made. And one of the problems is about what we are as a nation at this point. I mean, can we still all pull together as a nation? What does it really mean to be an American at this point? In 2009, what does it mean to be an American? And that's part of the stuff that we never really talk about. You know, we were attacked at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. And every time somebody says, what is this all about? Somebody responds by saying, we were attacked on December 7th, 1941. And then after, since 2001, you say, well, how do we deal with the Muslim world? You say, well, we were attacked on September 11th, 2001. Well, you know, that kind of answer keeps getting us into the same routine again and again. And as you said, we see our pocketbook shrinking. We see, the cost of living just for basic things that you and I used to do when we were kids, you know, an ice cream cone or a trip to the beach or to an amusement park becomes a major economic enterprise for someone at this point. And your local theme park and your water supply is owned by an international conglomerate from Switzerland or Abu Dhabi. I mean, how does this work? Does it work? These are questions that we as Americans really have to start asking ourselves and asking our leadership to really come down from the heavens and start to address these things on earth.
But I think we really have to realize when it came to Afghanistan, and this is what we really have laid out in our book, we've laid out the evidence, you might as well think of it that way, of what the American responsibility is to the Afghan people. So as far as we're concerned, we absolutely feel that there is a moral obligation here. There is a legal obligation that the United States must do right by the Afghan people. They're not doing right by the Afghan people. That's certainly the fact.
Well, that expose of activity by a hired gun, so to speak, around the embassy in Kabul last week, the type of folks that are the mercenaries over there making lots of money and representing the United States. It was a horrible story. Maybe you're aware of their antics.
Yes, I am, yes.
And I don't want to go into that, but how horrific. And also, let's talk a little bit about how the drug money enters in. Certainly the Taliban had eliminated a lot of that activity. I have stats here from 2007 that show that there was a 34% record rise in the levels of the growth of the poppies for 2006-2007. What's going on with that? I know that is an underground money stream, lots of embassies, lots of state departments in various countries, I'll put it like that, certainly benefit from that money stream of drugs. So tell us about Kabul and also how far it is that it's safe in Afghanistan. And then I understand it's rather fortress-like there. And then the ramifications of the drug and heroin that comes out, I think it's like 93% from Afghanistan worldwide.
The drug issue has been something that's been really overlooked and misunderstood from the very beginning. You know, we were told when we were there in 2002 by a Time magazine reporter that during the war in the 1980s, he put it this way. He said the planes came in full and they went out full. They came in full of weapons and they went out full of drugs. And they were brokered, those drugs were brokered in the Middle East and got into Europe and in the United States during that time period and made a lot of people very powerful. That kind of money back in the 1980s and early 1990s drove a lot of people to become increasingly powerful throughout that part of the world and also in the United States.
You also have to factor in that the drugs have always been used for off-the-books operations. That has been the tradition of the CIA. That is the tradition of intelligence agencies all over the world. So the drug running is really kind of allowed, effectively. I mean, the whole idea of the war on drugs is really, it really never stops the drugs because there's always an undercurrent of need for that off-the-books operation to be financed. What happened, though, in the 1980s when you had the drugs being used to finance the Afghan operation is these people actually became completely financially independent. They were really given access to the world market, And of course, the idea that the Taliban, whatever happened in the 1990s, the fact is today the Taliban is you know, being financed through drugs and many other means too. That's not the only way that they're being financed, but drugs has definitely been a very easy way for these kinds of operations to be financed. But that's what we have to keep in mind, that the original use of the drugs was really to finance operations that the CIA did not want to have any exposure on.
And the Pakistani military actually set up a trucking company called the Logistics Cell that was responsible for trucking the drugs to the various ports where they could be exported from. So, I mean, this has been it's kind of an institutionalized event that has been going on since the 1980s in that part of the world. And, you know, the various authorities that have looked on this have just simply looked the other way because they were financing something that had to do with other priorities.
Our Secretary of State now is Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State. Would she know what you're talking about?
I would imagine, you know, that's interesting.
We're doing this kind of just conjecturing to the audience, but she has that position, and this is knowledge, so would this be something she would discuss, do you think?
There is a kind of compartmentalization that goes on in government. You know, they say the need to know. That old joke that the Nixon people used to use about, you know, culpable deniability, credible deniability. They have to be able to deny that they know something about a situation. And that is the way, that is intentionally set up to be that way. When we interviewed Paul Warnke as an example, who had negotiated the SALT II agreement in Washington, and he said, I said, were you aware of the fact that your negotiations were being undercut in the field by efforts that were being made to destabilize Afghanistan and to make the Russians concerned about their southern border? And he said, no. He said, that was never something that I was aware of. He was not open to that kind of thing. And that's the way the official world works. You know, it's intentionally set up to be that way. So would Hillary Clinton know about what's going on? I think Hillary Clinton would probably have a good idea, but in her official capacity as the Secretary of State, I doubt that she would be able to address it in any meaningful way.
So we have the emerging of Pakistan. We have the chaos in Afghanistan. We have a military budget that is off the wall in trillions. And we have we're going to rev up in Afghanistan militarily. Can you, in your best judgment, either one of you, kind of foresee, as you have looked backwards and through history, how long do we get to visit, so-called, in the area? Is it quite permanent as you look at things?
Well, and certainly in terms of international relations, the United States is a big country. It has a lot of influence around the world, and we have interests in that part of the world. The problem is that for the United States, it's a long throw. It's a long way away. China is there. India is there. Pakistan is there. Russia is there. Iran is there. They have been interacting with each other for millennia. It's a very sophisticated place with all kinds of cultures and ethnic overtones and religious overtones to the way they do their business.
We also really have to, you know, look at what we're living through right now really is the vestiges of failed 19th century British policy towards the region. And that was why I brought up the Halford Mackinder concept of the controlling Eurasia. That was a 19th century idea that the British Empire used to basically fend off the Russian Empire. But we have to really consider the fact that whether it's the Russian Empire or the Soviet Union or Russia today, that is their neighborhood. What we're talking about is the United States traveling thousands of miles to basically go into Russia's neighborhood or the Soviet Union's neighborhood and tell them how they're going to relate to their neighbors. And we now had the British Empire doing the 19th century, and we have the Americans doing it the 20th century. I think that's part of the problem. So there is definitely a need for a complete rethinking of what it means to be, you know, the top superpower of the world. And at this point, because of the economic catastrophe that we're in, we really don't have much choice.
I mean, what the United States has been doing since 1947 has been going around the world establishing free market capitalism wherever we are, whether it's in South America or whether it's in Southeast Asia or whether it's in South Central Asia or whether it was in Europe. This is what we do. And the fact is that that ethic of free market capitalism, of course, at this point, has been largely discredited. The United States really doesn't have an awful lot of credibility when you look at the world financial system. The world financial system looks at us. I mean, you look at the headlines in the major newspapers today, it says China is concerned about the United States printing money. Well, here's a communist country telling the United States how to be a good capitalist. I mean, the ironies abound.
Well, yes, I guess I don't like this story too much, you know, about where we are and why we're there and all of that. It's kind of a sad story. We'll come back in just a moment, and I'm just enjoying this so much. Thank you for your input, for sure.
Is credit card debt stressing you out? If you're serious about regaining control of your finances, Big Solutions, the country's leading nonprofit debt management and consumer credit counseling service, can get you back on track. Whether you're behind with your payments or just frustrated with balances that never seem to go down, BSI can help you. Creditors have given Big Solutions very special repayment arrangements to help you get out of debt. These include lowering interest rates by 50% or more, bringing past due accounts current, and stopping harassing collections calls. BSI's team of certified financial counselors can consolidate all your credit card bills into one low monthly payment.
I chose BSI because they never asked for high fees I couldn't afford, and my creditors told me that Big Solutions had a great reputation.
Call the debt specialist at Big Solutions right now at 1-800-497-7722 to receive more information. BSI works with your lenders, but more importantly, Big Solutions works for you. Take control of your finances. Call 1-800-497-7722.
Utopia Silver believes it is your God-given and constitutionally protected right to make your own health care decisions however you choose. You have a right to truthful information about natural alternatives for healing and preventing illness. We don't sell drugs or tell you just to ask your doctor about expensive medications that only manage disease symptoms and have side effects that lead to still more medications in an endless spiral. Instead, we provide you with honest information and quality products so you don't have to depend on drugs. Utopia Silver is known for fighting for health freedom, but we also make and distribute some of the best colloidal silver, colloidal gold, and other top-notch supplements available anywhere. Take charge of your health and support our health freedom battles by visiting us at utopiasilver.com. That's UTOPIASILVER.com, or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338. This is Ben Taylor, and you will be appreciated in Utopia.
Restore the Republic, the social network for the modern revolutionary. Activating the silent masses into action. At RestoreTheRepublic.net, we're seizing power from the globalist world controllers and handing it back to the people. RestoreTheRepublic.net, where patriots rally on the objective. The Liberty Bell tolls once again for a movement on the rise. Make RestoreTheRepublic.net your place to unify and activate the revolution.
Had about enough of the bold-faced lies and propaganda, have you?
Republic Magazine exposes the mainstream media garbage for what it is. Grab a stack and take America back. Use Republic Magazine to wake the people and crush the corporate-controlled propaganda machines. Page after glossy page of factual information to fuel the second American revolution. Get it all and more at RepublicMagazine.com.
We come to the final segment of today's show. Perhaps we should raise a glass and toast the people of Afghanistan for their survival through all the ravages of history. Certainly a focal point of the their area, Pakistan, and all the other stans. One thing I did learn was Stan is an ancient term of Indo-Iranian origin, meaning place. So that helped me a lot. I did find that out. But I'm going to turn the mics to you in this final segment. Please give out your website, where your book might be obtained for an interested purchaser or someone at the library going to find it to become better informed, and anything else you can help us with, maybe a prediction of how much longer, 9 more years in Afghanistan for the U.S. of A., will we financially survive it? Anyway, all those things. Thank you for being on Born on the 4th of July. I turn to you, Mr. Fitzgerald, and to you, Ms. Gold.
Well, first of all, the book is available, Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story, at citylights.com. It's certainly online in a lot of places and in bookstores. Our publisher is City Lights. And we also have a website, invisiblehistory.com, where you can also get access to, you know, to the website, to the City Lights website. So it's all available there. And, but as far as I think, you know, my own personal feeling at this point is that I like to say that this really is more of a test of the United States than it is the Afghan people. The Afghan people know who they are. They have been suffering, yes, but they do know who they are. I think it's the American people that have to come to realize how the power of the United States has been used and what we have to do to rethink and reformulate a way of presenting ourselves to the world that we all can live with the world in a better way.
You know, that's really the tragic irony of our relationship with Afghanistan. If you look back into the documentation that goes back to the early part of the 20th century, you can see that the appeals by the Afghan leadership to the United States to come and work with the Afghan people in order to bring them forward into the 20th century. This was going on. They didn't see the United States as a colonial power. They had lived with colonial powers. They were always being usurped upon by the Iranians, by the Persians. Historically, they were being usurped upon by the Punjabis. Historically, they were being usurped upon by the Russians, and then they were being usurped upon by the British. And they looked to the United States when they first had the opportunity, and they got out from under the control of the British Empire, and they came to the United States and said, please, please, open the door. It will open the door to you. You can do anything you want. Help us develop our industry. And that never, ever happened. For the Afghan people. There's still a chance that that can be done. That would be a miracle at this point if the Obama administration can somehow pull it off. But the only way that the American engagement with Afghanistan right now is going to work is that if the Obama administration does a complete 180-degree turn and starts to serve the Afghan people in some basic way that is for their benefit. They are smart enough, they are capable enough of understanding that change of heart, and they will willfully accept that.
And you would think this travesty of bombings and explosions and weaponry and all of that would get to be a little old hat if it was always happening on your soil. you'd think, wait a minute, these people need to go home and tend to business. At this juncture, we've got enough business to tend to at home, don't you agree?
Oh, by all means. We have an awful lot on our agenda here that's being taken off the plate because of all the responsibilities that we have. But you have to realize, I mean, we can't just simply walk away from a situation like this around the world. We have commitments. This is like a parent who has made commitments to their children to make sure that they get off on the right foot. And that's a commitment that we have as the leading world power since World War II. Even if we don't continue to be that power, we still have to maintain that attitude and slowly perhaps wind our way down, but do whatever we can to help unwind the wartime situation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fitzgerald, Ms. Gold.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
It's been super.
With recent internet